Welcome to the Plain English Attorney Podcast. I'm your host, Jeffrey G. Marsacci, and I'm an attorney, certified Medicaid planner, and author by trade. But I've been told that my biggest strength is to boil down complicated legal issues into plain English. In this podcast, I'll cover a wide array of legal, financial, and current event issues relevant to today's busy listener. It's my goal to make the complex more simple for you so you can get on to what is important to you in your life. Please make sure to check out the links in the podcast description. And as always, please subscribe and comment. Hi, this is Jeff Marsacci, the Plain English Attorney, and welcome to the Plain English Legal Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about the big probate lie that financial institutions tell. Now, let me just give a little background, because using that word lie seems to be something pretty extreme. But the fact is, I've seen such a detriment for my clients and families about this lie that I just have to call it as it is. It is a lie. Now, what I imagine is the vast majority of the people in these financial institutions telling this lie don't really believe it's a lie, or at least not that much of a lie. But here we're going to talk about exactly what the lie is and why it's happening. The lie is, oh, our financial accounts are stock accounts, brokerage accounts, bank accounts, money markets. They're beneficiary driven. So all you have to do is name a beneficiary and it avoids probate. That's the lie. And again, it's a much bigger lie than even the people telling it probably realize. So again, we're talking about brokerage accounts, mutual funds, bank accounts. This doesn't typically apply to life insurance or annuities. And it applies, though, to a lesser extent from what I've seen in my experience with IRAs and 401ks. But mutual funds, brokerage accounts, bank accounts, absolutely. This is an out-and-out lie. No, it doesn't avoid probate, because here's what happens. When a person owning an account with a beneficiary designation attached to it, the financial institution gets notified. So then what does the institution do? They're going to demand, in order to release the account, transfer it, liquidate it, whatever, they demand to have a copy or an original of a death certificate proving the person had died. Very reasonable. They're going to have forms to fill out related to the beneficiary claiming the account. And they'll also typically try to throw in, hey, give us this information and we'll set up this account with you at our financial institution so we can keep the money and keep making money. But even that's fine. That's not probate. But then they ask for letters testamentary or letters of administration. These are papers from the probate court for an account that supposedly avoids probate. Why do they need it? They shouldn't if it avoided probate, but no, they're insisting that the person authorized by the probate court send in that proof that they can handle things. So already they're involving the probate court on an account that supposedly avoided probate completely. Meanwhile, let's walk a little bit on how you get to those letters testamentary or those letters of administration, because I have people calling my office all the time or sending me an email. Hey, I was told I need letters testamentary. Can you type that up for me? No, I can't. That has to come from a probate court. And they're shocked. It's like, I thought this account was supposed to avoid probate because it named a beneficiary. That's what my father told me, or that's what my mother told me. Well, no. Okay, so when someone dies and then a probate estate needs to be set up, the appropriate person who's the executor named in the will, or if there isn't will, they're the administrator. It's typically the next of kin or they agree on somebody. They have to fill out a lot of paperwork, which often means a preliminary inventory. Okay, what accounts and assets did the deceased person have? What was in their individual name without any right of survivorship or without a beneficiary designation on it? Then they want all of the joint accounts with the right of survivorship or accounts with the beneficiary designation on them. And then they also want you to check the box, were there any IRAs or 401ks that had named beneficiaries or life insurance policies? So all this gets filled out, and you have to send it in along with a written and notarized oath of office that you took to be a good administrator or a good steward of the assets, and a cover sheet and a bunch of other papers. It's probate. You got to get this whole process started. And then if the court approves that, then they send you the letters testamentary or the letters of administration. So you got to go through all that to get the paper being demanded by the financial institution that said this account is beneficiary driven. You don't need to have probate for this account. So, all right, you get that paperwork and you send it in. Is the whole ordeal with probate over? No. No, it's not. Because now, at least in North Carolina and probably other states, the court now insists that because you listed this stock account, brokerage account, mutual fund, or bank account as having a pay-on-death beneficiary on it, they want to see that paperwork from the financial institution proving that it's not part of probate. So now you have to go and get paperwork from the financial institution just to prove it didn't have to, quote, go through probate, even though you've already done all of this other stuff just to get this account. So let me make sure I'm saying this as plainly as I can, because they want the signature card, which is just the proof that, yeah, it was paid on death. The probate court wants you to prove that an account that avoided probate by getting paperwork from the financial institution that told you there would be no probate, they need that paperwork just to prove that the account avoided probate. So this is the big lie being told by financial institutions, often to the great detriment of our clients' families having to go through all of this crap. But it, unfortunately, it's not stopping there with the probate lie. As an attorney with an estate planning practice, and I've been doing this for almost 25 years, many of our clients come to us specifically because they want their estates to avoid probate as much as possible. We end up with so many clients who seek out avoiding probate as the way to do their estate plan, and they're getting to us because they just finished wrapping up an estate that took 2 years to put together. They had a loved one that passed on, and their estate was a mess, and they had to deal with all of this stuff. And so they want to avoid probate, and they're typically using a revocable living trust as the way to do it. So when we set up that trust, and then we send them to the financial advisors or the bankers, and we're telling them and giving them the instructions, hey, you need to move this account so it's owned by the trust, we're getting feedback and pushback. Oh, you don't need to do that. Your accounts are beneficiary driven. So don't bother transferring that account like the attorney told you to. Just name the beneficiaries on the account. At that point, these professionals have just crossed the line into the unauthorized practice of law. So let me make sure that I'm clear on this. There are financial institutions that when you set up an account, they'll tell you about the beneficiary designations and they'll help you get that set up. That's fine. That's not giving legal advice. It's not practicing law. They're simply telling you about the account. Where the line gets crossed is when you have an attorney who's done an estate plan for you and has given instructions on here's how things have to work with your account to make it work with your overall estate plan. And then the financial professional tells you, don't do what the attorney said. I'm telling you to do something different for you to reach your estate planning goals. That's when they have ventured into the unauthorized practice of law. So it was, they're giving legal advice, and it was bad legal advice at that. So what are the legal consequences of just using beneficiary designations in place of transferring an account into the revocable trust? Well, first, the account now doesn't really avoid probate, just like we discussed in the first half of this. There's just a lot of probate paperwork needed from both the court and the financial institution just to transfer the account. But it's going even further than that. There are no reasonable age limits on a beneficiary designation like there is with a trust. Most accounts will be distributed to the beneficiary at either age 18 or 21, depending on the financial institution or state law. And most of my clients agree that this is just too young to receive significant amounts of money. I had a client once who, I didn't have the client. I was a financial advisor asking for my advice about two of his clients that he was trying to get over to me. But then, tragically, they died in a car accident together. They did have their daughter named as the pay-on-death beneficiary on a stock account with more than $600,000 in it. And this is going back about maybe even as much as 15 years ago. And she was about 2 months short of her 18th birthday. So she gets this money when she turns 18. And she drops out of high school, marries an unemployed 25-year-old man, buys a big house that long-term she can't hope to keep up. And then she still has about $120,000 left in the account. And she goes, I have $120,000 in my account. I'm never going to have to work a day in my life again. Her life was ruined. And it wasn't just that the money got wasted. Her life was ruined because there wasn't a trust set up to make sure she was a reasonable age before she inherited this large sum of money. So you don't end up with any reasonable age limits just automatically being applied to beneficiary designations. Another thing, there are so many contingencies that can't fit on a beneficiary designation form. I have clients who want, if anything happens to both of them, or if they're single, to them, it goes to their children. Oh, well, what if one of their children dies before they do? Well, and they have kids. Oh, they want it to go to the grandchildren. And then, well, what if something happens to one of those grandchildren? You can only put so many different contingencies onto a pay-on-death beneficiary form, but you can put so many contingencies into the trust so it goes exactly where you want it to be. Now, what if the beneficiary happens to be disabled at the time of distribution? If that money goes directly to them and they're receiving disability or Medicaid as their health insurance and getting a large sum of money means they get kicked off those programs, well, that's exactly what happens. When you've got a beneficiary designation and someone dies, that's it. They get the money and they get kicked off their benefits. So the trusts, at least the ones we put together, avoid this loss because there are protective provisions in the trust to make sure that's exactly what does not happen to them. They're allowed to keep their benefits and the money supplements and pays for things that aren't handled by the programs. What if the beneficiary happens to be in the middle of a lawsuit or bankruptcy? They get that money and the inheritance is lost to creditors. So these financial institutions, when they specifically tell you, oh, don't put your account into a trust because your accounts are beneficiary driven, they're opening up your estate to a whole bunch of potential problems that you wouldn't want and that you were trying to avoid by putting together a revocable living trust in the first place. So all of these problems are completely avoided by the trust owning the account when the client passes on, while beneficiary designations don't do that. It's because so many of our clients are starting to report that their banks and financial institutions are giving them pushback on our account titling recommendations that I felt I had to do this podcast, and that it had to be a little harsh. Now, look for me to do another installment with a gentler tone that you may want to get out to every friend or family member who's a financial professional that you know who might be unknowingly crossing the line into the unauthorized practice of law and potentially creating all of these problems for their clients. In the meantime, for more information on revocable living trusts, please check out the links in the description below or check out my free ebook, Estate Planning Basics, available through my Linktree account at linktr.ee/plainenglishattorney. Again, that's linktr.ee/plainenglishattorney. So we hope you got some good information out of that. Stay safe and plan ahead. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Plain English Attorney Podcast, and we hope you found this session interesting and informative. For more information, please check out the links in the description, and please let us know if you have any ideas for future podcasts.